which is this little booklet right here. Okay? This little booklet is dated in the back March 31st, 1970. Okay? So both Silence Now Would Be Sin from August 1968 and this booklet, Wyvern Bible Fellowship from 1970, Stan mentions the dedication of the Bolton Memorial Library amongst his list of reasons for separating from the GGF. In Silence Now Would Be Sin, Stan states the following regarding the dedication of the library. Quote, not one word about any stand for Pauline revelation was mentioned. In addition, a responsive litany was read that stated in part, quote, We set the new library apart for the learning of the Holy Word and of all man's wisdom, which is a gift from Thee. Bow down Thy heavens, O Lord, and come down and make Thy house now and forever Thy dwelling place. This house now and forever Thy dwelling place. Stan viewed this dedication and litany as having cast a shadow over the man they were trying to honor by promoting viewpoints that Baltimore would have repudiated. So, Stan views this as a glorification of human wisdom and viewpoint, and he views it as yet another example of the intellectualism and the trend towards neo-evangelicalism that we've been looking at over the past number of weeks. Summer 1968 GGF Conference. In Wyvern Bible Fellowship, again dated March 31st, 1970, Stan mentions an additional reason for his separation from the GGF, not mentioned in Silence Now Would Be Sin. Stan took exception to a tape-recorded message delivered by Raymond Rich at the 1968 GGF convention, in which Rich allegedly, quote, urged pastors to invite modernists, Roman Catholic priests, and even atheists to lecture in their church so as to then, quote, reach them for Christ. Stan is quick to point out that neither Grace Bible College nor the Grace Gospel Fellowship has repudiated the serious departure from the plain teachings of God's Word. This appears to have been the last straw for Stan. This is the last clearly datable event before the publication of Silence Now Would Be Sin on August 1st, 1968, when Stan formally announced his separation from the GGF. Now, I want to point out to you that it appears to me that Stan was not at that conference, because he explicitly mentions that the statements made by Rich that he objected to were tape recorded. So it would seem as though he is pulling away. It would seem, just based on the facts as they are, unless there's some other things that, you know, we're not aware of at this time, that this is sort of the dedication of the Bolton Memorial Library in April, and these statements made at the GGF conference that summer were sort of the last straw, and Stan officially announces his intention to leave the GGF on August 1st, 1968 with the publication of Silence Now Would Be Sin. Before we move on to the next point, any questions about any of that? It's pretty straightforward information. Now, it's important if we look at the next point to understand that immediately upon leaving the GGF, Stan and those sympathetic to him immediately moved to form a new organization, okay, the Grand Bible Fellowship. According to a booklet titled, Why Can't We Get Together, dated March 6, 1979, that's this booklet right here, similar cover but a different title and slightly different contents. So that's dated from March of 1979. Shortly after deciding to leave the GGF, Mr. Stam and others moved to form a new fellowship organization called the Brian Bible Fellowship. So, again, they're leaving one organization here to found and establish another. Stan states, quote, in our booklet, Wyvern Bible Fellowship, we have listed and explained the basic reasons for our withdrawal from the Grace Gospel Fellowship and the formation of the Berean Bible Fellowship in 1968. Now, look, if Stan leaves the GGF in August of 68, and in his booklet from 1970, Wyvern Bible Fellowship, he also says that that is the same year that the BBF was formed, the Brand Bible Fellowship. then it is seemingly pretty clear to me that he leaves the GGF in August, and before the end of the year, he and others involved in that decision are moving to form the BBF, the Berean Bible Fellowship. This establishes the fact that shortly after Sam and the Berean Bible Society left the GGF, they moved to form the BBF as an alternative grace fellowship organization to the GGF. This point is also brought home in the pages of Why Berean Bible Fellowship, where after concluding that GBC had been lost to the neo-evangelicals, Sam states the following about why the BBF was formed. Quote, Berean Bible Fellowship was formed upon a declaration of faith which states in part, as saints and members of the true church, we are to maintain a Christ-honoring testimony separate from all forms of worldliness and apostasy, demonstrating obedience to the Lord Jesus Christ and love to the Lord Jesus Christ and love to all men. And then he gives those verses there that I mentioned. Reflecting back in Why Can't We Get Together, again from 79, on the events of the past two decades, Sam goes all the way back to 1958, coincidentally the year of O'Hare's death, as the time when the leaven that led to his departure from GBC began to infiltrate the GGF. Now, I've said to you all along, I find this statement fascinating. O'Hare dies in January 1958. When Sam, at the end of the 70s, as he looks back on what's happened in the previous two decades, he goes all the way back to 1958, the same year O'Hare dies, as when the, quote, leaven that led to the controversy begins to manifest itself within the GGF. And here's his statement, quoting again from the booklet, Why Can't We Get Together? In 1958, however, a little leaven was introduced into the GGF school, and then more and more and more. By the late 1960s, after much anxiety, soul-searching, and prayer, and much discussion with the leadership of both Grace Gospel Fellowship and Grace Bible College, some of the members of the GGF became convinced that it would be displeasing to God to continue in this already seriously compromised fellowship. In 1968, after 10 years of futile effort to bring about a change, the Berean Bible Fellowship was formed to provide opportunities for scriptural fellowship among those who desire to remain true to the truths and principles upon which the GGF and GBC had originally been founded. So, in other words, the BBF is going to be formed now as a new organization, a new fellowship organization, to be true and consistent to the principles upon which the GGF had been founded back in the mid-1940s. Two sources clearly indicate that at the time of the formation of the BBF, BBF retained and adopted the same doctrinal statement as the GGF. First statement. Grace Believers, the Grace Movement, the Grace Message by Charles Baker, found in the December-January 1977 issue of Truth Magazine. He said, personality differences has caused some to withdraw from the Grace Gospel Fellowship, and they have formed their own fellowship organization. Adopting word for word the original doctrinal statement of the Grace Gospel Fellowship as the basis for their new organization. A couple points there. Number one, the BBF adopts, when Sam and others leave the GGF and go in that same year to form the BBF, they adopt the exact same doctrinal statement of the organization that just left. Okay? Number two, well, let's back up. Now, if you're judging things by paper, you would think, based on paper, why do we have this second organization when they're asserting all the same things that the first organization was asserting, the one they left? Okay? The BBF's claim, though, is we're the ones that are remaining true and faithful to what, you know, was originally set and established as the principles of faith for this organization back when it was originally established. But on paper, there are virtually no differences between them as of the writing of this article by Baker in 1977, okay? Now, the other thing you need to notice is, what does Baker attribute to the split? What does he say is the reason for this group leaving and starting a new group with the same doctrinal statement?
Personality
differences. Okay, I'll have more to say about that in a minute. A second article now. A word from the Berean Bible Fellowship Board of, should say, directors. In March 1978 issue of the Brand Searchlight, responding to Baker's article in Truth, the BBF Board of Directors wrote, quote, Brean Bible Fellowship did indeed retain the same doctrinal statement since they had remained true to it, while Grace Bible College had flagrantly violated it. Okay? So top of page 3. So the BBF was founded in 1968 as the alternative to the GGM and viewed themselves as the pure successors to the ministry of J.C. O'Hare. In this case, we agree with the BBF board that Mr. Baker's statement that personality differences were responsible for the split between the GGF and the BBF is only partially true. It needs to be remembered that there were major philosophical differences in terms of philosophy of ministry that impelled their separation. Okay? So, this is not just a personality conflict. There were personality conflicts involved, but there were much more, there was much more at stake in this discussion between Stamm and the college and the GGF than simply a differences of personality. There were major philosophical differences in philosophy of ministry, and to what extent, you know, with all the neo-evangelical stuff we've been discussing over the past month and a half, all of that was in play, and we do agree, I do agree with the board of the BBF in the sense that Baker's statement that this is all personality conflict is not entirely correct. Okay. Any questions about that? Point. So now you got two organizations. So I should probably draw this like this. Both of these organizations view their origin in whose ministry? J.C. O'Hare. Okay? The first one is the GGF. Well, actually, let's be more specific. The first one to come out of O'Hare's ministry is Worldwide Grace Testimony. Then you have the GGF, and then you have Milwaukee Bible Institute, ultimately Grace Bible College, GBC. Okay? Then out of this collection here, you have a new group formed, BBF. The BBF has the exact doctrinal statement as the GGF, okay? But they view themselves as a true successor to who? O'Hare. And even to this day, if you start discussing, both groups are very interested in O'Hare. But when you start to get beyond O'Hare into some of the stuff we're talking about now, now is where you start having the what? The headbutting and the friction and all that sort of thing. Okay? So this group is formed in 1968. The BBF is formed in 1968. And basically, folks, you understand the BBF is a protest group of the GGF. They are former members of the GGF that did not like what they saw going on at Grace Bible College and in other areas, and so as a result, they leave in 1968 and they form a new organization, the BBF, that adopts the same doctrinal statement that the GGF had. Okay? So from its inception, the BBF has been a protest organization, a protesting what they perceive to be, quoting Stamm, the flagrant violations of the doctrinal statement of the GGF by Grace Bible College. Okay, everybody with me on that?
Lee, you have a... I just wonder if it's applicable or important. Between O'Hare leaving, or starting Worldwide Grace Testimony, he also was the founder and president of the Four Seas Conservative Congregational Christian Churches. He was a congregationalist, and he started that. It only lasted, he only stood with it 1 year, but that was, I think he was still, he was pastor at North Shore.
Yeah, we went over the official name changing of the church from North Shore Congregational Church to North Shore Church, and I'm going from memory here, but I believe it happened in 1929, okay? Then O'Hare, even before Worldwide Grace Testimony, we also studied that he was very involved with the IFCA and getting that rolling. I'm just looking here at from the point of view of the Grace Movement. Okay.
That's interesting. The issue then, even as it was as this, was the emphasis on conservative theology. He felt that there was a departure even there among the Congregationalists.
So Hare dies in 58. Okay. The college in Milwaukee changes its name from Milwaukee Bible Institute to Milwaukee Bible College sometime in the mid-50s, 1955-ish, and O'Hare is still on the board of the school when that happens. Okay? So, to what extent O'Hare, I'll just say this for the record, in one of my meetings I asked DeWitt point blank, I said, do you think O'Hare would have been on board with this neo-evangelical stuff? And he told me emphatically no. And I'm glad he said that, because if he would have tried to argue with me that he was, I would have disputed it with him right away. Because O'Hare would not have been for a lot of this stuff. I don't feel he would have been for a lot of the stuff that begins to infiltrate here in the 60s or become an issue in the controversy between Stamm and Baker and Dean. Okay? But 68, a group leads the GGF, forms the BBF, adopts the same doctrinal statement, and from there on, you're going to have this, they're a protest group. From the beginning, protesting they perceive to be the violations that are occurring with this group. Okay? Pastor Jordan said to me one time, he's like, I've heard him say before that, if you're going to leave an organization or a group, you haven't left if you remain in the parking lot throwing stones. Okay? And I think there's a lot of truth to that, and let's look at the next point. Alright? Post-separation controversies. So there are other controversies here between Stamm and members of the GGF/GBC even after he leaves. Even after formally leaving the GGF in 1968 and moving to form the BBF, Pastor Stamm continued to keep tabs on what was going on at GBC. The college often found itself as Stamm's target in various articles in the Searchlight. During a dinner meeting with Dr. Dale DeWitt in July 2013, he shared with me that there were four stages to Stamm's controversy with GBC. The following is a general summary of that conversation. The first phase was the mid to late 80s, which was associated with the Weddle, neo-evangelical, and intellectualism that we've been discussing that led to the split. In 1970, DeWitt writes an article that presents a translation of Psalm 8 that Stamm objected to. In the early 70s, he had a controversy with Dean over psychology and sensitivity training. And then in the 1980s, there was a controversy, spill over into the early 1990s over the issue of the gospel and whether or not there was more one gospel or more than one gospel. A fifth controversy that was noted, but that I did not include here because it's not related to Stamm directly, is a controversy of a group called Friends of Grace Bible College that he mentioned during this conversation, and he also mentioned somebody's name specifically who just happens to be in present company. I'll let you figure out who that is. So, we covered in detail this first controversy that led to the split. I want to just say a couple words here on a few of these others, at least the first two. Translation of Psalm 8 controversy. This controversy shows up as the eighth reason for leaving the GBC and forming the BBF in the March 1970 publication of Wybrand Bible Fellowship. This controversy swirls around the September 1969 GBC publication comment in which Dale DeWitt changes the King James rendering of angels in Psalm 8:5 to read that man is, quote, but little lower than God Most High, end quote. Stamm viewed this as yet another example of the intellectual elevation of human wisdom taking place at GBC. Quoting now from that booklet, YBBF, he says, Stamm writes, the article is largely self-contradictory, but DeWitt goes to great lengths to exalt the human intellect. Charles F. Baker, president emeritus of Grace Bible College, later wrote an article in Truth, February-March 1970, defending DeWitt's rendering and insisting that Psalm 8:5 does declare, "Thou hast made him a little lower than God." We contend that whether we consider man before or after the fall, in his present or future state, to represent him at any time as, quote, "but little lower than God" borders on blasphemy. Man always was and ever will be far lower than God, and God will always be far, far greater than he. It is sad to see our dear brother Baker, so long and so greatly used of God, actually defending the apostasy at Grace Bible College as he does in this case. Now look, I'm not prepared to make any kind of comments on this translation issue. The only thing I'll say at this point about this is you start to wonder if have you really left if you're going to be chucking stones here, okay? At one point in my conversation with Dr. DeWitt at a dinner meeting in July, he said that it became the perception of many at the college that that Stan's intention was to basically destroy the college. If they weren't going to go along with him and what he felt should be happening there, his intent was to do them in. And so there was a perception that this type of ongoing stone throwing, if you will, was a result of that. Stan addressed this controversy in a series of articles in the Searchlight between June and September 1970, possibly longer. The matter is again mentioned in the 1979 publication, Why Can't We Get Together, as one of Stan's reasons for leaving the GGF. In this publication, Stan states the following regarding the state of affairs within Grace Bible College in 1970. Quote, "By 1970, at least four GBC instructors, including its president and one member of its board of directors," he's referring to Veltman in this case, "were already involved in the declension. Not to mention the involvement of the GGF and GBC official boards and all of, in both organizations, who had condoned all this. Perhaps they have not considered that they will have to answer for this at the judgment seat of Christ." End quote. Now, I do have in my possession the copy starting in May 1970 and running through, I believe, August, of Stam's writings against DeWitt and his translation of Psalm 8. Okay? I just deem this as being unnecessary to delve into all the details of that. You just need to be aware that it happened. Yeah.
So Sam wrote Why Can't We Get Together?
Yes.
What does he say in that book exactly about, I mean, you're never going to get together as long as you're throwing garbage. And so what is his main gist of that book then?
Think about the timing of this. Where is it, this one? This was in March 1979, okay? At the end of 1977, beginning of 1978, Baker writes in Truth Magazine this statement about that the BBF has adopted the same doctrinal statement as the GGF and that it's explainable by personality conflicts. He's addressing... Within 10 years, there was a movement amongst some of the younger people looking at this and saying, we don't understand this. Why can't we all say on paper we believe the same things. Why can't we, you know, work together more? Or, you know.
He was addressing that question from the younger people?
That's what I perceive to be going on, yes. Okay. There was some sort of a, well, why are we separated?
Yeah.
Okay, and what he's doing is basically writing about 10 years after the fact to remind people about why he separated. He had no intention of ever going back.
Right.
Okay. Because he, from the moment he left, he viewed those guys as having apostatized from what they were supposed to be when they were founded. And again, he viewed himself, the Green Bible Society, and the BBF as the true successors of O'Hare's ministry. And I would argue that much of what is known about O'Hare has come to people to this day through the filter of Stan. Okay? Now, I don't know how much of O'Hare's personal history Stan knew, But I find it real fascinating that there's never any mention of this time period that we have documented in this class where O'Hare for a time entertained the X-28 view. Okay? Nobody, that information was completely unknown to the modern day grace believer who is getting all their information about O'Hare filtered through Stan. Now either Sam didn't know it, which is possible, okay, or he chose not to mention it because he felt it would have possibly done some sort of damage to the witness for the mid-ags view that was going on. So, but he always, to answer your question, Beverly, he always viewed himself as the true successor of O'Hare.
Right. I just wondered the purpose of what you
asked about. Now, it's interesting. I don't know. If you haven't done this, you should go to my website, the Grace History Project website, because there's an audio link on there to O'Hare's funeral. Okay? You can listen to O'Hare's funeral. We've made that available. Gerald Halston has helped. He's made that available, and Kurt's put it on the Internet, and I've linked to it. But that funeral was presided by Stan and Baker. And I listen to that funeral, and I think to myself, what happened? You know, it's they seem to be working together. They seem to be, in one step with each other, in at least how they come across. And I know that's just one sample, but you do ask yourself, geez, you know, this went bad fast. Okay.
I do think that Pastor, one of the, personal opinion, that one of the reasons or consequences of all of that, that the split controversy is that there are many people who doctrinally were in agreement not only with the doctrine but also in the philosophy of ministry with Stan, but are to this day strictly independent. They're not signatory. They seem to refuse to become signatory to any other fellowship. I noticed that as we travel, we find pockets of people who are definitely great people who know how to identify themselves in any other way. So I do think that there was a consequence. People just don't want to be involved with any of that controversy.
I think that's true. Let me see here. Who was it? I used to hear Pastor Jordan tell stories about cult in Pennsylvania, how cult stayed out of the stuff because he didn't want it affecting his assembly. So, you know, there were people as a result of this that said, you know what, we're just going to go off and do our thing and not worry about, you know, your political organizations here that are going to be, you know, doing what they do. The next one I want to touch on is this psychology sensitivity training. Why Can't We Get Together 1979 contains a section titled Since 1970, in which Sam lays out events that had transpired since that year which drove further wedges between the GGF and the BBF. One of these was the subject of something called sensitivity training. Sam reports that by March 1972, we had abundant evidence that such courses were indeed part of GBC's curriculum, that mixed groups of students were meeting in, quote, interpersonal relationship classes, pledged to keep their secrets between themselves alone, not even their parents were to know what they were discussing. We also had much evidence that these sessions were largely made up of confessions and discussions about that subject. Protests about this were met with denials, and that any such thing existed, even though we have presented voluminous evidence from 26 pages of their own classroom papers. In 1973, the BBF published a booklet titled Sensitivity Training and the Bible. That's this one right here. Okay? Sensitivity Training and the Bible, warning fathers and mothers in the grace movement about what was going on at GBC. Written by Sam, this booklet outlines what sensitivity training is, its use at GBC, and a scriptural answer to it. In the section titled, What is Sensitivity Training?, Sam states the following. Sensitivity training is a modern psychological approach to personal and interpersonal problems. It is used by police departments, business firms, schools, and even church organizations, supposedly to help the participants to get rid of their frustrations, hostilities, hang-ups, and to develop self-confidence and leadership abilities. He also mentions that the Nazis and the communists used this to install fear. So you read between the lines about what he thinks about it. There are numerous forms and degrees of sensitivity training, ranging from discussion to discussion, to, quote, touch and feel at it, and even sessions at which the participants meet, sometimes for days at a time, in the nude. The most popular form of sensitivity training, and the one for which the others sprang, is a discussion group at which participants were urged to be totally open and honest about themselves and each other, to hold nothing back, and to tell all, thus encouraging the others to do the same, one and all revealing their most secret feelings and failings at, quote, gut level. These groups are small, generally 10 to 15 in number, meeting together under the direction of a leader to discuss their problems. The leaders impress upon those present the prime importance of, quote, complete honesty. The sessions are closed to outsiders, and all the members of the group are pledged to keep their secrets between themselves alone. The individual members are expected to keep their parents in ignorance about what is going on. Sensitivity training is practiced under various names, such as group encounter, group therapy, group dynamics, interpersonal relationships, truth sessions, self-examination sessions, self-awareness sessions, group confrontation, group interaction, leadership seminars, etc. Grace Bible College has used at least three of these titles, and like many other institutions of learning, has hidden them under other titles in their published curricula. Okay. In a section titled The Dangers of Sensitivity Training, Stamm outlines the dangers of this psychological technique. After using a fictitious scenario to highlight the dangers of sensitivity training, Stamm makes the following accusations against Grace Bible College. Quote, we proved by documented evidence in our April issue that Dr. Jack Dean of Grace Bible College gave out a quiz on the taste of new wine, in which the students were instructed as follows, give some illustrations of how Christian parents are dishonest. Could this say any more clearly than it does, tell how your parents are dishonest? Another question follows regarding the student's relationship with his parents. Do you really know your father and mother? There it is, Dad and Mom. They are asking your children questions about you, asking them to tattle on you, jeopardizing their relationship with you. Think it over seriously. You who have been blindly loyal to a school that may do untold damage to your children and to you, not to mention the cause of Christ. Another matter is considered seriously is the fact that these sessions, we have young college students discussing that with each other all too freely, and they are encouraged to do this and to tell all. We saw from the documented evidence presented in the April Searchlight that subject had a considerable place in these discussions, was discussed in reports. Did President Jack Dean make complimentary marginal notes? So what he's saying is only in the sessions where that subject came up did he take notes. That's Stamm's accusation. Those who are loath to believe that the leaders themselves promote such discussions should refer to the April Searchlight and note that they are under Practical Theology 453 and Christian Education 445, Dr. Jack Dean Professor. There's a list of assigned and supplementary reading that includes no less than 6 books by Sigmund Freud and another about him titled Freud, His Dream and Theories. There are also other books in the list by unregenerate intellectuals destitute of the faith in what the Bible says about that matter and the Christian life. Look, he's really going after me. When I read this, it seems to me that, first of all, unfortunately, I don't have any documentation on the college's side on this particular issue. Okay? So everything we're getting here is from Stamm. Stamm claims that the school denied it, that it ever happened. He claims that over and over again. Stamm is objecting to these sensitivity training meetings. He's objecting to the recommended reading as part of these courses, being Sigmund Freud and other unregenerate intellectuals, and he is definitely sounding the alarm that this is going on at Grace Bible College. Now, Jack Dean and Charles Baker are taken to task by Sam in the next section, What Saith the Scripture, for promoting unscriptural thinking and contradicting their own prior statements. Quote, again and again, the leaders of GBC have made it clear that they hold to the pagan dictum, Know Thyself. In a classroom paper titled Practical Theology 454, Jack Dean Professor, we find the opening statement, group interaction. This is the major part of the course, coming to know and understand yourself. Similarly, an official GBC statement dated May 13, 1972, and distributed at the 1962 GGF conference says in part, quote, the purpose of group interactions is to help a person come to understand himself so that his own hang-ups will not get in the way of his working with other people. And how many times have we not read the testimonies of GBC students graduating comments to the effect that they have come to know and understand themselves better through their studies at GBC. Along with coming to know oneself and others, sensitivity training is also allegedly concerned with acceptance of self and others. Dr. Dean's writings have much to say about accepting ourselves and others as we are. A report on, quote, group counseling, February 23, 1971, therapist Jack Dean states that, quote, basically the group was concerned about acceptance. Unwittingly, GBC's official statement on the subject shows how one's personal scriptural convictions about right and wrong are apt to be subjected to the standards of the group. It reads as follows, quote, now, this individual knows that if he would violate the standards of the group, he has a responsibility in his relationship to the group, and therefore he would hesitate even more, end quote. Did it originate with godly men or teachers of the Word? No. It originated with unregenerate psychology professors in Bible-denying colleges and universities. That Dean has been well brainwashed in two of these universities and has come out a strong advocate of modern psychology, albeit with a, quote, Christian emphasis. Dr. Dean, it should remember, did not obtain his doctorate in the field of theology, but of psychology. Thus, his doctorate hardly applies to his position as a president of a Bible college. Now, I'm just curious, how are you guys responding to these statements? Yeah.
I can say in the mid-60s, I had a high school class in my early years of high school that the curriculum was based on exactly what he's speaking about here. So he really wasn't kidding that this was being taught in schools. He finds it even more so today. And it's based on humanism more than this religion. I can see where maybe Stan was a little bit upset. That's my comment.
Okay. Tom?
I would agree kind of with what he said there. It would be a shocking thing, I think, today and obviously back that many years. On the other side of that, it sure seems like to put something in print like this is so direct, and that can't ever be recalled. You know, there it is. Here we are years later discussing it.
You're talking about their published statements on the part of the school at this GGF convention in 72?
Well, that, and also I would even critique Stan there just a little bit, and some of the directness of what he's saying.
It certainly has the, if I'm hearing you right, Tom, I think it certainly has the perception of attacking. He's sort of out for, you know, the blood's in the water and the sharks are circling, and, you know, it's almost like he feels like, you know, this is the thing he's going to get him on.
Right. Well, and even that last sentence there, that's pretty inflammatory.
About his doctorate not even being in.
It's true, but there's lots of different ways to word that or not even mention it.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts before we finish this section? Yeah.
When I worked at Youth for Christ, they definitely used some of the sensitivity training. We spent a weekend at camp, up at the Grace Camp. We had two groups in youth that were youth guidance and, I'm not sure if I went blank, but one group worked campus life, worked with the high school. We worked with that group. and there was always a kind of a division between us. So they bring us together trying to promote a trust and sensitivity towards each other. And not one particular weekend, but always it was an issue. But so, and there were other things that they did that I could see a lot of this coming in play.
Any comments on that? Okay. Stan quotes from an article written by Pastor Baker that originally appeared in April 1951 issue of Truth to prove the duplicity of the leadership at GBC. Regarding psychoanalysis in popular psychology in 51, Baker said the following, quote, "I feel that Christian people and parents in particular need to be aware of these theories, which are behind so much of the education, socialism, communism, and many-sided propaganda which confronts us today. Christian people need to exert every influence possible to see that their children do not get infected with the three diabolical doctrines, and of course, to see to it that they themselves are not taken in by this thing that has the appeal of the modern and the popular. There is need that Christian homes become strong fortresses for the truth, places where the Word of God is honored and is taught." These accusations on the part of Stam against GBC regarding sensitivity training were denied in the following statement made by the college on May 13, 1972. "We do not, nor have we ever endorsed sensitivity training." Baker addressed the issue in the August-September issue of Truth with the following statement, quote, "Is it not a shame that the word sensitivity, which has such rich spiritual meaning, has become associated with a practice where mixed groups of people, sometimes even in the nude, interact with one another in an effort to overcome hostilities and practice a practice which has been labeled sensitivity training," end quote. In Sam's mind, this is not a denial on Baker's part that sensitivity training was ever practiced at Grace Bible College, but that the most extreme forms, including nude participants, were never practiced. For Stam, this was not analogous with saying that, quote, no form of sensitivity training had ever been used at Grace Bible College. I think, just judging by the statements that we have, that's probably correct. According to Stam, the college never answered the specific charges brought against GBC in the April 1973 issue of the Searchlight. Instead, they were responding with the following three vague denials. Number one, Stam got his information from a disgruntled, dismissed former student. Number two, Stam's statements were taken out of context. And number three, Stam has not visited GBC for many years, so how does he know what is going on at the school? Yeah. I think DeWitt's comment spoke for itself that Dean was committed. Remember when I gave you that range of values last week of DeWitt being most in line with new evangelicals, Dean in the middle, and Baker on the bottom? He did say that Dean had embraced counseling in its psychological and structural aspects. So I take that to mean that there was, I take Baker at his word that the most extreme forms of sensitivity training were probably not going on at the college. But it seems pretty clear that something was going on along those lines.
Had Sam ever been the pastor of North Shore?
Yeah.
He was there right after Booker.
I'd have to check the years on that, but he was for a time.
Yeah.
And I'm told that it didn't go well. Did you have another?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. So we got 12 minutes in to consider page 7, conclusions. I thought long and hard about how to sort of wrap up this mini-series of lessons, if you will, about this controversy. And this is kind of what I came up with for either good or bad. We'll just look at what I've said here. So conclusion. How should we view this controversy? It is the opinion of the Grace History Project that the best way to evaluate these dark chapters in the history of the Grace Movement is to judge each side by its fruits. I kind of made this comment last week. Milwaukee Bible College was founded in 1945 to teach young men and women the mid-Acts Pauline Grace message and train them for the ministry. While the college has maintained that they have always done this, and that they have never abandoned their commitment to grace theology, many observers, both inside and outside of the GGF, would not agree. By adopting the nuanced arguments we have documented in these lessons, By adopting the nuanced arguments that we have documented in these lessons that professors ought to have the, quote, academic freedom to teach anything that was not in violation of the doctrinal statement of the college or the GGF, the door was open to various portions of the neo-evangelical agenda and its resulting implications. On paper, the college has always maintained a commitment to the principles of the school's founding. However, in actuality, students today are exposed to both progressive dispensationalism as well as notions that Peter and Paul preached the same gospel, among other things. In order to meet the academic requirements of the state of Michigan, the college, should say, was forced, and still is, to hire non-grace professors to teach in certain academic disciplines, a practice that continues to this day. Now, we talked about that at length, too. Okay? Sam, on the other hand, was not always very gracious in the manner in which he conducted himself during this controversy. In the end, judging from the fruit of their ministries, we cannot help but side with Sam. Sam remained firm to the original purpose of both the GGF and GBC as standing for the unique and distinctive ministry of the Apostle Paul. Unfortunately, Sam's conduct and manner of operation during the controversy manifested certain less than desirable personality traits that would show up again in another controversy during the 1980s. The move on the part of Stamp and others to immediately form a new organization, the BBF, highlights, in our opinion, the greatest weakness of the grace movement, the fierce desire to organize beyond the local church. I've been hitting that nail also from the beginning when we started talking about this. As we have stated previously, the heyday of the grace movement was when the men and ministries involved remained independent and loosely, I don't like the word facilitated there, and loosely cooperative or something like that, independent Bible churches. The decision to organize beyond the local church introduced a political element into the movement that would stall their progress and ultimately divide the movement. Formed in protest against the GGF, the BBF has always felt the need to explain and justify their existence. This has created a legacy of hostility between the two organizations as they have both claimed to be the rightful heirs to the legacy of J.C. O'Hare. Within 10 years of the death of O'Hare, the movement that he was so instrumental in creating had fractured into two opposing camps with identical doctrinal statements, each considering themselves the rightful successors of O'Hare's legacy. All right, any questions or comments about any of today's notes or sort of any of the stuff we're sort of winding down here? Yeah.
I think this really does show your point that you had in a sermon a long time ago about Satan's biggest tool today is doctrine. And that how that just the disputes on doctrine has led to so many more issues than anything else that, you know, but people never really think of that as being his main tool these days.
Mm-hmm.
Doctrine slash, you know, grabbing onto whatever doctrine the Satan is running with it, you know.
Right. So, to set up where we're going next week, in 1962, a young 15-year-old kid from Alabama got saved at a Methodist meeting in at a New Year's Eve watch night service at a church in Alabama, Mobile, Alabama, and taught himself through reading Stamm and Baker's books and so forth and having conversations with others the grace message. And moved to Chicago at the end of the 1970s to work with Sam at the Brain Bible Society. Okay? And that's Pastor Jordan. And so what we're gonna, so while the big organizations in the Grace Movement were battling it out in the late 60s and 70s, he was pastoring a church in Alabama, sort of, you know, aware of different things going on, but virtually sort of unaffected by it. In the late 70s, he meets Stamm and has conversations with Stamm, and through a process of events, Stamm invites him to come to Chicago and assist him with running and administering the Green Bible Society so that Stamm would be freed up to write commentaries. So he moves his family to Chicago at the end of the 70s, and we're going to shift gears now a little bit starting next week, and we're going to go back and start looking at what was going on with Brother Jordan and how he eventually comes in and becomes a part of Stamm's ministry, and then how those men also parted ways in the 80s, and what the issues were that led to that parting of the ways. Okay, and again, it's going to be largely doctrine. There's going to be some personality involved in it, like there always is, but much of it is going to be, you know, disputes over doctrine. So we're going to, next week, we're going to pick up, we're going to get that early history with Pastor Jordan, and we're going to run that down then into the 70s, where he comes to Chicago and becomes involved in sort of the organized grace movement, and then what happens from there. Yeah.
I'm interested in your comment on this next to the last point on facilitating independent Bible churches remaining independent and loosely associated. How then would we have, or how then, can we have a cooperative institution such as a Bible Institute without something other than just loose? There has to be some organizational structure even to have a Bible Institute, it would seem to me.
I understand what you're saying, and I think that the answer I would give is that if there were young men in this assembly that showed an interest in wanting to be in the ministry, I think that the thing to do is to train them for that within that local church.
Yeah. Okay, and then the other fellows out here hear about it. Can they, how do they get to be a part? How do we enlarge that without some organizational structure?
I see where you're going, and eventually there will be. What I object to is the formalizing of the organization.
I think the idea of the local church being, that's where it ought to happen. I agree there.
If any of these young men in this assembly or old men or whoever wanted to, you know, be trained, if they wanted to be trained, it seems to me that it'd be the job of the elders of this assembly to, number one, identify who these men are, and number two, if they're serious, to figure out how to get that accomplished. Because here's what happens: you have a young man, he grows up in your assembly, he graduates high school, and then you send him to an institution. So you send him off over here. When he's done, he's not going to come back to you. He's going to go to wherever that institution sends him. Okay? Which to me seems like the completely opposite pattern of what Paul establishes in the Pauline epistles about Timothy identifying faithful men and teaching them also the same things so that they can have a ministry, you know, they can have a ministry right there and further what's already going on within that local church. I would favor that sort of model any day, regardless of the formalized structure, over sending them somewhere to learn who knows what and come out completely different in belief, doctrine, and philosophy than who they were when you sent them to the institution. So, you know, that's a tall order then, it seems to me, for the elders of that local church to be up to that task of doing that. But it seems to me that that's where the real responsibility lies. And just one quick comment. What is interesting about Brother Jordan's Grace School of Bible is that he sends the school to you where you are. He taught it. He in a study like this, he laid out a curriculum and taught some things and videoed it. And now he doesn't require you to go to him. He sends it to you. So you learn, you uptake, you understand the doctrine and so forth where you are, and you have ministry where you're already at, as opposed to being required to go somewhere and, you know, be in an institutionalized educational setting. Now I understand the academics and the, you know, the institutionalized mindset doesn't like that, because, you know, when you're done, you don't get a credential, you don't get a degree, you don't get any sort of thing like that. You just get a certificate that you went through the school and a pin to put on your tie, and that's sort of viewed as not real training for the ministry. And so, you know, now you have a whole other set of issues about, you know, what is really training for the ministry, and whether or not you, and it goes right back to this: do you need liberal arts? Do you need all this stuff to be trained for the ministry? Obviously, some say yes, others say what?
No.
But that is a difference of philosophy of ministry.
What was Titus doing when Paul sent him to set things in order, apparently supervising over a number of churches? What was that organization?
I think in doing that, he tells them to ordain elders in every city. So the order that Titus is to bring to the island of Crete is to identify in the churches in every city men who are capable of running the churches in those assemblies.
And he still was in authority or part of the leader.
Well, I agree, but but not indefinitely. The way I view what's going on there is he comes in, he identifies the men and he trains them with the full intention and purpose that he's going to leave, and when he leaves, the work of the ministry in those cities and those churches is going to be entrusted to those elders that they ordained and trained to function in those capacities in his absence. That's the way I understand that. I don't think he was establishing a hierarchical, you know, Bishop of Crete or anything like that, which the Catholics did, you know, not too far into church history. Okay, good questions, good comments. I appreciate your interaction. We are past time slightly. And so we will resume class next week.
And also, jumping, Commissioner Nesterson, which you don't